You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
Hello and welcome. Just a few days ago, when the leaders of the G7 group of nations met at Biarritz, the charming seaside town in southwestern France, the world was ready for US President Donald Trump to be belligerent, contrary, inconsistent, and exasperating. And of course, he was all of that. In the middle of many statements, he also made a call for Russia to be readmitted to the Group of Seven, a demand that he had made during the previous summit of the Group of Seven Industrialized Nations last year in Charlevoix in Canada. He basically wanted G7 to go back to being G8. Unrealistic, provocative, contrarian, devious. All of these adjectives made the rounds, as leaders of most of the other nations in the group either aligned themselves against Trump, like most of the European leaders, or at best stayed mum. Among the other six nations of the group, Canada, Germany, France, and Britain categorically disagreed with Trump, while Japan preferred to stay out of it. It was only Italy's outgoing Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte who leaned towards Trump's side of the argument. Incidentally, Conte had leaned towards Trump's view even at the summit in Canada in 2018. Trump had voiced similar sentiments at the previous G7 summit as well. Some observers said this was par for the course and traced the history of his coziness with Russia and Putin, harking back to the allegations of his collusion with Russia in the run-up to the 2016 presidential election. Others said this was just Trump being Trump, or he was trying to distract attention from whatever is going on at home, or that he was just trying to be the center of attention again, seeing how isolated he was among the others in the group. So, the question we're asking on this edition of Digging Deeper with Money Control is this: why does Trump want Russia back in this group of nations? Is it because G8 became G7 at the insistence of Barack Obama, and the stated policy of Donald Trump's presidency has been to undo the legacy and everything that Barack Obama did? Is it just that, or is there something else? We will try and explore some of these answers on this edition of Digging Deeper with Money Control with me, Rakesh Sharma.
The Deep Dive podcast series.
Donald Trump was of the opinion, in fact, he insisted, that the presence of Russia in the group would be helpful in dealing with problems relating to countries like Iran, Syria, and North Korea. Nobody else seemed to share his enthusiasm, however, insisting that nothing had materially changed regarding Russia or its president Vladimir Putin since the expulsion from what was originally the G8 over Russia's annexation of Crimea. Neither Russia in its current affair nor Putin, from their point of view, fit into the scheme of things of the G7 being a community of liberal democracies. After all, Crimea was the first such annexation in the Western world since the Second World War. The expulsion of Russia happened in 2014, during the second term of the Barack Obama presidency. And Trump has, whenever the context came up, referred to it almost gleefully as an inadequate response by Obama and a result of his impotence in being unable to prevent Russia from doing what it wanted to do. Russia, this is some background, annexed Crimea on the 18th of March 2014 after gunmen took over the peninsula. The Crimean Peninsula was part of the Ukraine, jutting into the Black Sea to the south of the Ukraine. It is also connected to Russia by a bridge across a sliver of sea on its eastern side. The Russian annexation of Crimea was preceded by the Ukrainian Revolution of 2014, which was also, in a way, what led to the Crimea incident. Beginning in November 2013, the Ukraine saw a series of protests leading to violent demonstrations and clashes with the police. Ukraine had wanted a closer association with the European Union. An association agreement with the EU would have facilitated this and given Ukraine access to loans in return for liberalizing reforms. But that would have come in the way of its relationship with Russia, which was the largest trade partner that the country had. Because of this, successive presidents, including the then president Viktor Yanukovych, had delayed signing the agreement while expressing their desire for a closer relationship with the EU. Eventually, this led to popular protests. In February 2014, after a lull, The protests began again in right earnest. This time, the violent demonstrations took the lives of 130 people and ended in the overthrow of Yanukovych. While the president fled to Russia, fearing for his life, the Ukrainian parliament passed a resolution divesting Yanukovych of his duties and setting up an interim government. Yanukovych called the decision illegal and sought help from Russia. Meanwhile, counter-protests in favor of the previous president cropped up in the eastern and southern parts of the Ukraine. In response to Yanukovych's appeal and the unrest against the revolution, Russian President Vladimir Putin started the process, as he put it in a meeting, of returning Crimea to Russia. On the 23rd of February 2014, masked Russian troops took over the Crimean parliament. On the 16th of March, Russia included Crimea as part of the Russian Federation and installed Sergei Aksyonov as the prime minister. A referendum was conducted in Crimea, which supported the move. Russia pointed to the referendum to term this a move towards self-determination by the people of Crimea, while most others saw the referendum as a sham, an excuse for Russia's actions. Many nations around the world, particularly the Western world, however, saw it in an entirely different way. They held it to be in violation of a series of agreements and treaties, starting with the Belavezha Accords that established the Commonwealth of Independent States, that is the CIS, after the breakup of the USSR. Many of the republics that were part of the erstwhile USSR issued statements against the annexation, with some perceiving it as a threat to their own existence. The European nations, along with the USA, were strong in their condemnation. Canada recalled its ambassador from Russia and cancelled its participation in the G8 summit that was to be chaired then by Russia. And what was the American response? Then-President Barack Obama, ever since reports of Russian military movements were reported, had been warning Russia not to act in a way that would threaten the sovereignty of the Ukraine. He also told Putin that he would face political and economic isolation if he interfered territorially in the Ukraine, and that the US would boycott the G8 summit. And you would recall that photograph where Obama is looking threateningly at Putin. After the annexation, within 4 days, the US imposed the first set of sanctions, following 10 days later by another set of sanctions that included the freezing of the US assets of Russian officials. The non-Russian members of the G8 got together and passed a resolution to remove Russia from the group for its annexation of Crimea. The statement released by the group of leading industrialized nations went on to say, and I quote, "International law prohibits the acquisition of part or all of another state's territory through coercion or force. To do so violates the principles upon which the international system is built. We condemn the illegal referendum held in Crimea in violation of Ukraine's constitution. We also strongly condemn Russia's illegal attempt to annex Crimea in contravention of international law and specific international obligations." Unquote. However, Russia, in response, dismissed the G8 as an informal forum for dialogue, unlike the G20, where all economic and financial questions are decided. Even during the Crimea crisis, when Obama had been talking to Putin, asking him to desist, current President Trump had been baiting Obama, as was his second nature, and deriding what he called the US's ineffectiveness in dealing with Russia. In a tweet back then, what else, Trump had said, and I quote, "The US has appealed to Russia not to intervene in Ukraine. Russia tells US they will not become involved and then laughs loudly." Exclamation point. In his continual poking at Obama, Trump had also said last year, as BuzzFeed quoted it, this was also in the form of a tweet, when he said, "This was an Obama disaster. And if I were president then, he would not have taken over Crimea." But ever since he did become president, Trump has been supporting the cause of Russia and Putin at various forums, perhaps most famously when he seemed to trust Putin's word against that of US military agencies and intelligence agencies regarding Russian meddling in the US presidential elections, which Trump ended up winning. Even during the Crimean crisis, Trump had not directly mentioned Putin as an aggressor. It was at the time of the G7 summit in Canada last year that Trump had first made his forceful argument to get Russia back into the fold. At that time, Putin, when he was asked what would make Russia return Crimea to Ukraine, Putin had said, and I quote, "There are no such conditions and there can never be," unquote. Trump's continued support for Russia in the face of this position has served to isolate him among the US allies, and this seemed to be the case at the recently concluded G7 summit as well. At home too, criticism from the Democrats, the media and other agencies, and even Republican Senator John McCain, passed away recently, rest in peace, does not seem to have deterred Trump nor the Mueller investigation into the alleged collusion with Russia during the presidential elections. If anything, all the criticism and setbacks seem to have made Trump even more entrenched in his position. Donald Trump repeated his wish for Russia's inclusion this time around as well at the G7 in France. On both occasions, he was overwhelmingly rebuffed by the other members. Next year, though, the G7 is set to be chaired by the US, which means Trump will be able to invite the guests of his choosing. This time, French President Emmanuel Macron had invited Iran in a surprise move in an apparent effort to find a solution to the US-Iran issue. Trump, when he was asked, said he would certainly invite Putin, but was unsure whether he would attend since he is, quote, "a proud person." He went on to, again, bring up Obama, repeating that Obama threw out Russia because Putin outsmarted him over Crimea. Again, poking at the previous US president while seeming to be almost gleeful about Putin's putting one over on the US. And this is again in contravention of generally held American diplomacy, where all partisan hatred and tensions are forgotten when they leave American soil, and when they are elsewhere, they tend to represent America and not bring about these differences on foreign soil. But of course, Trump is an unusual president with unusual behavior. Nobody anywhere in international politics expects Trump to change or to look at an international issue without reference to himself. Why international issue? Any issue is always, always about himself. Now that the G7 is over, this issue of whether or not Russia will be invited back is certain to die down like it did the previous year and move on to other Trump-based issues, unless, of course, something unexpected comes up, forcing a reference. It is likely equally certain that come 2020 and the G7 summit to be chaired by the US, the issue will come up. And this time, he is insisting that the G7 in 2020 be held at one of his resorts, which is, again, an extraordinary thing to say when he's in fact going to be profiting from it. But of course, these scandalous things are a thing of the past, because as one piece on The Atlantic or Slate, if I recall right, went on to say, Trump now commits about 3 impeachable offenses each week. Now, with Putin's position clear vis-a-vis Crimea, that means there can never be a position where it'll be returned, etc., that the Ukraine-Crimea situation is not likely to change in the meantime. The other members of the G7, especially Germany, UK and France, have also made clear their position on liberal democracy and their firm position on Russia's annexation of Crimea. So, status quo is likely to remain when we approach G7 in 2020. And if Trump, as he has said, will invite Putin, and if Putin agrees to attend, especially as a surprise guest, like it happened this time with France and Iran, then there should be some kind of crystallization of the situation with regard to the other members. Let's not forget also that the summit will be held ahead of the US presidential election. Trump wants to hold the summit at a golf resort he owns in Miami. While Trump says he doesn't care about money, the summit at his property would, as one news report put it, divert a torrent of taxpayer cash into Trump's own coffers. Now, we've seen this happen even recently with Mike Pence's visit to Ireland. As we know, Mike Pence, the Vice President of the United States, is on a visit to Ireland. And most of his official business is going to be conducted in Dublin, the capital of Ireland. Except Trump insisted, or encouraged, as the news reports say, that Pence stay in his golf resort at Doonbeg, which is about 180 miles west of Dublin, which means all of the taxpayer money to house Pence's team will be going into Trump's coffers directly, when it need not have been quite as expensive as it has ended up becoming. One news report went on to say it's almost an extra $250,000. That's it. The issue of G7 and Russia to one side, Trump's position on Russia has the potential to make a big difference again in the US elections in 2020. It's still a year to go, and a lot could happen if the US-China trade war doesn't get resolved soon, and if the economic slowdown gathers pace, and if Trump keeps supporting Putin. And on top of that, US voters, especially the undecided ones and the weaker among Trump's support base, decide that things aren't quite going well for them. Trump's stand on Russia in the G7 instance could very well work out to be a turning point. But will that deter Trump's insistence that Russia be brought back into the fold? We will only have to wait to find out. Thank you for joining us.
And finally, a word on our subscription product. Money Control Pro offers curated market data, stock analysis, and trading recommendations. You can now subscribe to Money Control Pro for just 289 rupees for a year as part of our independence offer. Use the code FREEDOM, FREEDOM. The offer is valid until the 31st of August for Android and desktop users. You can log on to moneycontrol.com to subscribe.
This has been a Digging Deeper podcast, and you have been listening to Money Control.